Yeah, we're back with the Cannabis Corner, and this is our 20th episode right here on Radio Tacoma, and we're really happy to be here. And last week we introduced our co-host, Uncle Dig, and he is here with us today, broadcasting live from somewhere in Oregon. How's it going today, Dig?
It's going great, Lucas. How are you?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. I tell you what, I kind of had to get in and focus a little bit. Some craziness going on out there right now with the politics in the country.
Oh yeah, it's nuts, and no one's really even talking about policy at this point. They're not mentioning drug policy. They're not talking about cannabis. They're not talking about fiscal policy. They're really just arguing about nothing.
Yeah, and last week we talked about states that are pushing forward with cannabis policy reform, and that is a really good thing. But as far as what's going on the federal level, we don't have any leadership from our federal officials. Biden and Harris have said something about decriminalizing cannabis, and that's a good thing. The president has always kind of hinted that he might legalize cannabis, and he came out sort of seemed like he was friendly to medical cannabis at the beginning of his term. But we haven't really heard much from the president more about cannabis. And going forward, it's just kind of we're just kind of floating out there with no captain at the helm.
Well, and honestly, Trump had an excellent opportunity to kind of consolidate some leftist support when he was leading that criminal reform stuff with the Kardashians of all people.
Yeah, yeah.
But he could have wrapped up marijuana legalization, and then he could have actually flanked the left from the left, and he could have offered someone something, but he hasn't done that. Instead, he came out against cannabis by his actions. The judges he puts into place and Jeff Sessions and his Justice Department have not been cannabis friendly, and popular outcry is the only thing that stopped him from ramping up enforcement, in my opinion.
We're going to talk about our first news story, which is the DC Democrats not voting on cannabis legalization like they planned on. If you saw around Facebook and social media, they had a lot of hoopla about there was going to be a debate on decriminalizing or legalizing cannabis, and it just didn't happen. And it's kind of strange because they had 113 sponsors on this bill, Dig.
Yeah, you know, and it looked like we had a lot of popular support, at least from the Democratic side. You know, the Republicans were probably going to vote against it. But here's where the Democrats wussed out. Everybody needs to stand up and be counted on where they stand on cannabis. We need to let these so-called liberty-loving Republicans say they want to continue locking people up for a plant. Look at what is going on with COVID in our prisons. This is a pandemic issue. It is an important issue. It's disingenuous for the Republicans to say it's not. These are all victims of political violence on behalf of the puritanical zealots of American sobriety, and they're being locked up, and some of them are dying for cannabis, which is so horrible. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, and they say they're going to delay the vote until after the election. So the name of the bill is the MORE Act, and this bill would legalize cannabis on a federal level by taking it off the Schedule 1 narcotic list. So I don't know, maybe they'll put it as a Schedule 2 narcotic, which I wish they would just take it off the schedule altogether.
I kind of thought they would take it off the schedule list altogether, which, guess what, folks? That means for the small amount of time they don't regulate it, it would become a tomato and you could grow it. But, oh well, subject to your state laws, of course. And that'll be another interesting fight if states want to keep cannabis banned while the federal government legalizes it.
Yeah, that will be interesting if they did actually legalize it. It seems to be they might vote it on in December, and I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out the reasoning behind putting it in that time period. Usually they try to put stuff in that period between the election and the inauguration in January. That's kind of stuff they want to kind of hide and push away. It seems like this they would want to get out in the forefront and be like, hey, look, everybody, we legalized cannabis. So let's go ahead and look at our next article, which is out of Psychology Today, and it's an article called Marijuana, the Risk and Benefits. And Dig, you took a close look at this article. What are some things that jump out at you about this article?
One of the first thing that jumped out at me is that he asserted that cannabis indica has a high CBD concentration with low THC concentration, and that sativas were opposite. And that's, first of all, that's not true. some indica dominant varieties do have, a lot of them have high THC concentration. All cannabis is capable of expressing high THC concentration. Also, low THC and low CBD concentration aren't mutually exclusive. We can see that in certain strains like Cannatonic, where there's a 1-to-1 CBD and THC ratio. So that was false information he put up. He also said that sativa varieties originated in Mexico, which is not correct. He also continually called it marijuana. And I don't like the term marijuana. I'm fine with weed, gauge, grass, pot, cannabis, whatever, but I don't want you to call it marijuana. And you might want to kind of riff on that a little bit, Lucas, as to what the problems are with calling cannabis marijuana.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to me. And this is something we're dealing with right now in Washington, is a lot of misinformation out there about this term marijuana. And we actually, and I even am almost to the point of calling it the M word, and I might even start calling it the M word. But the term marijuana was a term, and a lot of people know this history. The term marijuana was a term used in the Southwest by native speaking Spanish speakers, and it referred to Mary Janes that were in the brothels there. And that in itself is sort of a sexist term to begin with. But this was their term using, this is their term they would use to describe the cannabis sativa plant. In America, everybody, or in the United States, culturally, everybody would call that cannabis or hemp, or they would call it Indian hemp. And so,
or gauge or tea in the jazz age.
Yes. And so there were certain there were certain terms that Americans would use for this plant. Well, the authorities came across the term marijuana, and they found that a lot of people didn't know what that was. And then they started just jamming it all through the headlines all over the country. And there was a couple cases in Colorado that are actually real cases of instances where people were basically harassed and looks like made to testify that they were high on, quote, marijuana when they committed crimes. And then that was spread all over the country, and they started calling it the Mexican killer weed. They would compare it to opium. And then this term marijuana became such a terrible term in the consciousness of the United States that it worked its way all the way up through the Congress to the Marijuana Tax Act. And the story goes that after the Marijuana Tax Act was passed, that some of the people that voted on it found out that that was actually hemp that they were voting on, and they had a real problem with their vote, but they had sort of been duped into voting and to make this illegal. And we can, I have a fellow activist that's like an expert on this, and he was telling me how a lot of the Marijuana Tax Act and this term not only had to do with Latinx or people from South America, but a lot of this had to do with, guess who had a lot of the hemp farms? African Americans were really big into hemp farming. And so the Marijuana Tax Act, and I'm not an expert on this, but the Marijuana Tax Act put a lot of African American hemp farmers out of business. And so that's just a little side piece there that I can kind of riff on for a minute about the term marijuana. But I want to get back to this Psychology Today article. Right. And it's just amazing to me how at the highest levels of our medical industry or our medical field, that such blatant misinformation is put out there with such confidence. This guy writes this article, and he is really confident, and it seems really happy about what he's saying. And I don't want to personally attack him at all, but I want to just urge people, if you are talking about any topic, not just cannabis, but you need to talk to the experts, because he clearly hasn't, when he says things like THC and CBD and cannabis are inversely, their concentrations are inversely related. That is absolutely not true due to breeding, simple genetics. That is not true. You have 1-to-1, you have 2-to-1, you have 3-to-1, you have 1.5-to-2. I mean, you just don't know, really.
Even 20-to-1 expressions in really cool strains, like some of the old Harley Sue cuts and stuff. But here's the other thing that people need to realize. He is quoting good scholarship in this article. And when I say good scholarship, I mean approved. scholarship.
Yes.
Articles from scientific journals that have junk science. Here's what happened. Back in the 70s, 80s, and continuing on today, the DEA financed certain studies to say that cannabis was bad. They're still doing it, and they have flawed methodologies. Here's a few of the different flawed methodologies they used. One of them is they use people who smoke cannabis to see what the health effects of smoking cannabis are, who are also comorbid tobacco smokers, which means these people smoke cigarettes and cannabis, and then they'll turn around and say that the cardiovascular effects are primarily from cannabis. When we look at people who smoke cigarettes and cannabis, they actually smoke more cigarettes than they do cannabis. Another problematic methodology is they'll use really, really low quality cannabis for the experiments. So, you know, they get all of this cannabis from one farm back east, the one federally approved place to grow cannabis. And I can't remember if it's in Mississippi. It's in one of the southern states.
It is Mississippi.
Okay. It's Mississippi. And they grow absolute garbage. They grow absolute garbage. And they won't let us experiment with any of these new strains until the federal blocks on cannabis experimentations are done. Now, I will say internationally, some studies are good. Like Israel has done a lot of good studies on cannabis, funny enough. So have the Netherlands and some other places in Europe. But American cannabis science is very behind, especially as far as how good we are at cultivating the plant.
It is, and the DEA really keeps the research down on this. And matter of fact, this kind of we'll pull this right back to Washington. I was just looking out how to get a research license here in Washington. You would not believe the regulations you have to do to get a research license. And this is and then up on the federal level, it is even worse. So they kind of have it locked down, and then they say, "Oh well, there's no research to prove any of this," but the author who wrote the Psychology Today article, his things that he's missing are real simple things that he could just talk to a person that has a cannabis farm and get corrected. He is relying on a lot of studies out there, but you know that's sort of typical scientific writing that they do. I'm more disturbed about just the little things that he just glosses over and says that are real, but they cloud the whole conversation.
Oh yeah, because this will be given to psychology students. When I was in college, they used to bring in articles from some of this place. In fact, they brought in articles from Psychology Today, and so this will be taught to young people, and it's incorrect, and that's really unfortunate.
So next up, we're going to talk about a story out of Missouri. And last week we talked about Arkansas and how they were selling so much cannabis there, and now in Missouri, something a little different is going on, but this is more related to jobs. They're in a county called Carrollton, Missouri. They are really throwing in big on this cannabis boom going on in Missouri. They legalized medical cannabis in 2018, and now they're really starting to get the stores up, and they have to grow all the cannabis, and that's all getting going. And this one particular county is just throwing in big with the cannabis plant, and they even say in the article, "Hey, we're conservative, but we're all about jobs."
Yeah, and that's something that we've definitely especially been seeing during COVID, is that a lot of the jobs that continue to grow are cannabis. So a lot of the jobs that are there when the economy is experiencing a downturn are cannabis jobs, and they're good paying jobs. It requires a certain amount of skill, so you're learning a trade. It's a very good job. I think that it's good that they're throwing their resources behind investing in this, especially if the rest of the state is a little bit behind. They'll have an edge on the whole industry. But I will say that something the article mentioned that kind of bothered me is that basically it says that people in Missouri, since this legislation has been passed, have been without access to legal medical cannabis while waiting for their infrastructure to be approved. You know, all these grow ops building and stuff. If they had home grow, people could have had their first legal medicine in as little as 4 months, you know, indoor grow, and maybe quicker with auto flowers. I don't know much about auto flowers, but I hear they can finish in as little as 3 months.
Yeah, and this goes along with a trend that's going on in medical cannabis that was unheard of until recently, which is now not only we have recreational states, by the way, there's only two, Illinois and Washington, that don't have adult use home grows. Now they're starting to pass medical, full plant medical cannabis laws, not CBD only, but full yes. plant medical cannabis laws with no home grows, which if you go back to the original medical cannabis movement and this whole thing, it kind of defeats the purpose.
It's always about increasing access for the least amount of price to the patient. Medical cannabis is about freeing people from the medical industry. I liked that you said that, the medical industry, because that's what it is. They sell pills to people and they get them addicted and then they blame the company. They don't take personal responsibility. Doctors drove the opioid epidemic. They wrote the prescriptions. So honestly, and I don't want to be anti-medical establishment, but for everyday stuff, cannabis can be very helpful. And you don't need painkillers from your doctor when you can grow cannabis at home. And it's helpful for other conditions that they're prescribing very dangerous medications for, medications that are far more dangerous than cannabis.
Next up on our articles, we're going to move over to California and we're going to talk about social equity real quick in cannabis. And I'm going to just define what social equity in cannabis means to me, or kind of the general term is. And this is just the acknowledgement that the war on drugs adversely affected people of color more than other parts of our society. And therefore, the cannabis industry should be giving back to those people and to sort of lift folks up from the bottom, because the system and the government has been beating them down so long over these drug laws. And we do have proof of this. Nixon's aide told Harper magazine in the 1980s that the war on drugs was all about arresting hippies and black people. And that has been proven. And so it's a really great movement going on right now in the cannabis sector, which is social equity. And in my opinion, we need social equity all across our society, not just the cannabis industry. But it's great that cannabis industry has embraced this. However, there are some issues, but if we focus in on this California grant program, what they are doing is they are taking cannabis tax money and they are directly paying it to nonprofits to help communities of color work on their communities. What do you think about this, Dig? It really seems to be a good thing, but I know you were telling me earlier there's some concerns that you saw.
Well, I like the idea of taking money and investing it in social equity, although I believe that should be done on an individual or family level. I have some real problems with the way nonprofits move money around and how much they pay their administrators. But beyond that, I followed this website to the state of California's website, and I got this figure. A total of $9.6 million has been awarded to 69 entities representing 23 counties or portions of counties statewide. Four local health departments in collaboration with other entities received funding awards, as well as one solo local health department awardee. GoBiz anticipates applications for the second round of Cal CRG funding. More than $20 million available will be released in the spring of 2020. Now, I went to a link in the site that said awardees, that was hyperlinked, and I followed that link, and it goes to a 404. So I actually couldn't find where this money went, and that bothered me, and I tried to go in a little deeper, and I couldn't find anything. So one, California is doing this and they're diverting this money to nonprofits that should be going to help people in their communities. And they're not really being transparent about where it's going.
Yeah, that's right. And they're looking like they're going to give out about $30 million in grants this year and $50 million grants next year. And there's really a couple different ways that social equity is going on right now in the cannabis industry. One is this way, giving out grants to nonprofit. And another way is what you mentioned, which I call cannabis reparations, or I've heard called cannabis reparations. Out of Chicago, there's a town north of Chicago that was thinking about doing this, where they give money directly to individuals or directly to families. And then the other way they're doing social equity is actually giving people licenses and jobs, which is what they're trying to attempt right now in Washington. Right. And we are getting a little bit closer here in Washington moving forward. And these things... There's a is kind of all hands on deck. But they have had a hard time succeeding all around the country for various reasons. But there have been a lot of successes, and I'm hoping that this California grant program will be one that's a success if they can spend the money right.
I agree with you. And I also went down to the bottom of the article, not to get away from California, but the article also mentioned another important part of social equity, which is divesting cannabis funds from police departments. And a couple of places did this. A new budget proposal released in King County, Washington this week would shift $4.6 million in cannabis tax revenue away from the sheriff's department and instead use the funds to vacate prior convictions for cannabis, among other programs. In June, the Portland City Council approved an amendment to a proposed budget that would divest cannabis funds from the city's police department. This is good. See, the police shouldn't profit off the people that they have been abusing and stealing from all these years. We should push to divest all cannabis taxes from police departments for the next few generations at the minimum. Police have been abusing people in the cannabis scene for a long time. They shouldn't receive our money, period.
Hi guys, it's 9/5/2020, and this is Uncle Dig with a garden update. It was kind of a smoky nightmare here in Southern Oregon, and a cool 53 degrees when I woke up to do my garden chores. I rinsed a concerning level of ash off my girls, and gave them 2 to 3 gallons each, and fertilized the strawberry cough plant, probably for the last time. As I am a grower who flushes or cuts off the additional nutrients for a set period before harvest, I shoot for 2 weeks, but I'm happy with one. Some people think flushing is necessary to kind of clean out salt nutrients from the plants prior to harvesting, that it results in a cleaner smoke. I do not personally subscribe to this theory, although it was the reason I started flushing. Other growers think that flushing stresses the plant out toward the end of its life and causes some interesting expressions that you don't get other ways. I think flushing results in a more flavorful smoke for reasons more along these lines. Others think that flushing is pure humbug and feed their plants additional nutrients through to the end of harvest. There are some good arguments for this, such as not wanting to rob the plant of nutrients to produce essential oils during the critical last few weeks of flower. I would say that the best way to figure out what works best for you is to experiment. Grow 3 identical clones next to each other. Flush one for 1 week's time, another for 2 weeks' time, and feed your control up to the day of harvest. Then you can decide what works best for you. There are also organic ways to grow without additional inputs that I haven't been inclined to try. Last week, I told you about BT spray for caterpillars. You should spray this twice during the vegetative stage if possible. Ideally, we don't want to spray anything on the colas if we can help it. Apparently, BT is a systemic or inoculant that you don't have to apply more than once or twice a grow cycle because it stays on or inside the plant once it has been applied, much like mycorrhizal fungi and the root zone, something we can talk about in a later episode. I cleaned my garage in preparation for harvest this week. Next week, we can talk about prepping your drying and storage spaces for harvest. Well, that's it for my garden update. Thanks, Lucas. Let's overgrow the world.
All right. I really like that Uncle Diggs garden report there. I wanted to talk a little bit about what you were talking about on how the different opinions are so far apart when it comes to these flushes. And how we haven't really been able to put a finger down on what is really the proper way to do this. Now, I agree with you that we do the flush because we want to increase the terpene content and increase the resin production of the plant by reducing nitrogen. And I came across that on some various studies and some things I've read, and it really makes sense to me. And from my experience, it works. The plants that I've always watered right up until the end, they don't seem to get that funky smell like some of the other ones.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of stress is always good for a plant for it to express its best genetic potential. But cannabis has been a legally cultivated plant for a long time. Different methodologies become popular with different growers, and frankly, different methodologies work better in different environments. indoors when the plant isn't supported by soil, but a growing medium. Flushing can be really dangerous because you're completely removing nutrients as opposed to not adding anything additional. I'm a soil grower, so even if I don't add any chemical nutrients, I am still getting a little bit just from the soil the plant's in. Whereas if you're growing hydroponically or some of these other ways, you need nutrients present in your water at all times, or the plants will fade very fast.
Yeah, well, hydroponics, you would definitely not want to do a 2-week flush. I think about about a week flush on a hydroponic system. A lot of people do 10-day flushes on the dirt or soil, and 2 weeks. I think it's good sometimes. Now, here in Washington, because of our rain situation, I know a lot of times outdoors, people might even do up to, I don't want to say a month, but it's longer than 2 weeks, just because you can't be watering your plants a lot through September sometimes because of so much rain. And then all the rain, the more water you have out there, the more mold you're going to get and the more problems you're going to have with pathogens.
Right. Whereas in my area right now, it's September 30th and it's going to be 95 degrees out. And I went out and rinsed my plants off because I saw some aphids the other day and watered each one 2 to 3 gallons because it's going to be 95 degrees. So different environments do dictate your behavior when it comes to the plant. And so if you live in a really hot, dry area, you're going to be watering pretty much up until the day before harvest. Whereas if you live in a very moist climate like Washington State or the northern part of Oregon, it's going to start raining and it's not going to stop. And you do not need to add any excess moisture. There's plenty already, like you said. But I will say that the old school growers, the older people that grow, I will say seem to advocate pushing nitrogen longer. But they also tend to like to take the plant later too. Some people like to look at the trichomes, which are the little hairs that have the compounds that make cannabis work in a medical way on them. And they look at them, and if they're amber, people like a different amount of amber trichomes on the bud when they harvest. And older growers tend to in my experience, like those to be half or even more amber, whereas some of the younger people like to take them when there's like a quarter amber or less. And that has to do with how THC is produced and degraded in the flower.
Yeah, and the reduction of nitrogen or the changing of the fertilizers could increase or decrease the speed at which those things turn amber or darker color.
Correct.
Here we go back to, there is no cannabis research, and it's almost nearly impossible to get a research grant or something to to really pin down how these things work, because I promise you, they know how orchids finish. They how watermelons finish and tomatoes. They have it down to an exact science. They know what to do, and there's journal articles written all over the place about all this stuff. But with cannabis, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's illegal. So there's been very little pure science with this. And it is great that everybody has their own methods. But, you know, if you're like me, I really want to know what's going to work the best and then stick with that. Because if you're going to be doing it wrong, then what's the point of doing it?
Well, and I think that's why we've been lucky that in a lot of ways, cannabis is such a forgiving plant to cultivate.
So the final segment of our show each week is our It's a Bus segment. And this is where we look at someone who was arrested or busted throughout the country or maybe around the world. We've looked at some cases around the world as well. And this week we're going to look at the Minnesota Timberwolves guard, Malik Beasley, was arrested for cannabis at his home in a little suburb near where he lives. And he also got charged with gun possession. And this is a real interesting case. And we can talk about, I want to mention that Washington State has a cannabis registry. And this is one of the big concerns of medical cannabis patients out there, of putting themselves on the registry. Because once you put a gun and cannabis together, then it increases the penalties. You can get possession of a controlled substance with the possession of a firearm, which can get you in really big trouble. So these things are some of the reasons why people don't register for medical cannabis or even get medical cannabis cards, because it's kind of well known out there, at least here on the West Coast, that owning a gun and having cannabis around can be problematic.
Yeah, and it can. It doesn't have to be. There are, but this is why we need to change the laws so we're not focused on the whims of law enforcement. Because right now, most of the time, if you get in trouble for, let's say, being outside your plant count, right, in a state like Oregon, like let's say you have 9 plants when you're only supposed to have 8 or some stuff, and the sheriff comes and says, you have to cut that down, and he noticed you have a rifle, if you bought the rifle legally, he might not cause you trouble. But in Washington state, in the city, if you have your 9mm next to your home grow, they are going to nail you to the wall because all of a sudden you have an illegal cannabis plant. And because you have a cannabis plant, that firearm is now a federally illegal firearm because you have it and you're producing drugs, or you have drugs. So when you have a firearm and you're all legal, you're all legal. But the minute you put drugs in the same space as that firearm, you don't have any Second Amendment rights. And right now, because of the way the law is written, cannabis is the same as meth. Or actually, cannabis is worse than meth federally.
Yes, because methamphetamine is a Schedule II narcotic, which means the government says it has potential for research. But it looks like here, Mr. Beasley, they came to his house looking for something to do with a gun, and then they found the marijuana.
Yeah, and which would have just made his gun charges worse. It sounded like a neighbor accused him of brandishing a weapon, and they called the police on him, and this is what resulted.
So we definitely need to get those laws changed, and then that would let a lot of medical cannabis patients and people who use cannabis maybe come out of the shadows a little more, because people do like their Second Amendment in the United States, if you have not noticed. So that's our show for this week, and I'm so glad everybody tuned in. If you would like to get in touch with me, you can contact me at lucasbarfield@gmail.com if you have a question about the show, and you have an email too, Uncle Dig.
Yeah, my email is uncledig4@gmail.com, but I don't check it much. You might want to try to hit me up on Instagram @UncleDigDoug.
All right, thanks. See everybody next week.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter @MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH, Radio Tacoma. Thank you.